Blog Talk Radio.
Donkey, I don't know if you can hear a word I just said. I've just been rambling on the last 8-9 minutes. I hope you hear what I said. So you know what? Let me say it again because it's my show. I just wanted to give shout outs to all the best friends in the world. All right. To Mike Jones, Melvin Mosley, even to Eric Gash, even though I haven't heard from you in a minute. Best friends in the world, all right. Not the the quantity, but the quality of friends. I have the best wife in the world. Make no mistake about that. There is nothing this woman doesn't do for me. All right. And so, if I can take a time out and say thank you for being just so amazing to me, I'm going to do that. Thank you. Because for those of you who don't know, you woke up one morning and the world had just changed. You don't know why, but things weren't the same way. Things didn't work the same way again. And when things didn't work, for those of you who know, as old prideful men can be, when things don't work the way they should, we get a little paranoid. Okay. And I did. I admit it. I got a little nervous. And if it weren't for my really, really strong wife, good friends, and I like to think a deep sound mind for the most part, it would have been challenging. But nonetheless, we're coming out of it, coming out the back end of all that's going on. We're thankful, and I'm sure we're better for the experience. In the meantime, thank you all for making us part of your day-to-day. 949-203-4849. Again, 949-203-4849. We look to hear from all of our usual suspects. Hopefully we hear from our Jet fan out there in the East Coast. Beyond the East Coast, Lou, who's always a staple, and we love him, and there's nothing he can do about it. We're looking for fans of Philadelphia Eagles. We're looking for fans of the Washington Redskins. Where y'all at? Y'all talk all this smack. All right, now we get closer and closer to the season. Y'all done got crickets again. All right, stop hiding behind the cloak. All right? Look, I understand you want to hide behind all these other things going on. These are the more pressing issues. I understand that. But you talk all that game all the way up to now. Now you done got quiet. Okay. Look, if you're a Redskin fan, you like Dwayne Haskins, good on you. But you cannot deny that if Cam Newton walked into Ron Rivera's office right now, Cam Newton would have a job in a heartbeat. And Dwayne Haskins would be at the backup. All right? That just is what it is. All right? In the meantime, we'll move on. Let's see. What can we get to? We've got some good content that we just received. Of course, most of the new stuff we get now, and again, and most of you are aware that a lot of it is kind of binged on what's been going on most recently. We see most of the protests, they're changing, which is kind of good. We're getting away from, you know, obviously all the violence now, the really good quality protests where, you know, now it's the time to put things into action. We said this before, we'll say it again. It is time now to put things into action. Time out for all the rhetoric, and the marching is great, but if you're not going to put it on paper and put action to power, then, you know, we wasted our time, all right? Let's not let George Floyd have died in vain, all right? All right, let's get to our first feed. This comes from our friends over at Undisputed. Check this out.
Reportedly split on whether the NBA should resume their season. Patrick Beverly tweeted, quote, "Hoopers say what y'all want. King James says we hoopin'. He hoopin', we all hoopin'. Not personal, only business. Hashtag stay woke." Shannon, did you like what Beverly tweeted?
Nope. Because what he tried to do is paint LeBron James as a villain, Skip. He's like, no matter what, look, there are more important things than basketball. But LeBron James say we hooping, so we hooping. LeBron James is the only voice that matters. Now, if we've seen a lot of players, like I think Kyrie had 100 players on his call. Some of them have said, you know, this is bigger than basketball. We should postpone basketball till we get
the Friday night call.
Right, the Friday night call.
And by the way, LeBron did not participate.
That's
okay.
Correct.
All right.
So he's like, we should just postpone this until we get some of these things handled. Skip, yes, LeBron carries a lot of weight. But LeBron James is not the only decision that matters in this. So I don't like that. No, you do. You didn't talk about when you resigned with the Clippers. You didn't mention nothing about LeBron. You your own man, Pat Bev. Pat Bev is own man. Grew up, came up the hard way, go through the G League and all these other leagues playing overseas, mm-hmm. and made it to the NBA. Now all of a sudden it comes time to return to play our hoopers. King James said we play and we hooping. Now don't do that. Don't try to paint the man because, Skip, there are some people in society that believe basketball should be postponed. And so now, if I believe it should be postponed, there's some players that believe it should be postponed. There are some fans that believe it should be postponed. But obviously one of the most powerful players in the NBA says we should play. If we play, now LeBron gets painted as a villain. Nah, don't do that, Pat. You're entitled to your opinion. If you don't want to play, say, hey, I don't want to play. Or say, I do want to play. Don't bring King name in your mention. Kyrie ain't mentioned nothing about that. Nobody else has mentioned anything else about LeBron James wanting to play. He makes it seem like LeBron is the only one that wants to play. Giannis has made it clear he wanted to go back and play. So, nah, I don't like that. Don't try to paint the man as the villain. Mm-hmm. And plus, LeBron James has been working with, remember, Skip, when the Donald Sterling thing, he's like, Donald, he got to go. The Trayvon Martin. They put together the Heat with the hoodies. Mm-hmm. So, LeBron James has been fighting. Now what we're seeing is more athletes getting on board, especially in the NBA, and saying, you know what, I'm willing to risk a few dollars of endorsement because this is a cause that I believe in. Hey, I'm black. What happens when I take the – because we saw that happen to the with the Milwaukee Bucks player, Skip. Remember, Tabo Cephalosa.
Oh.
We saw what happened to him.
Did we?
He's like, okay, yeah, we got that uniform on is one thing, but once we take it off, you black in America, mm-hmm. they look at you as being black. You're just a tall black.
Incident in Manhattan.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget, was it Sterling Brown? What was the guy's name? I forget. But you know what I'm talking about. It was a basketball player. They got the same thing happened to him
oh, yeah.
in Milwaukee.
But Tabo found himself in the wrong place at the wrong time and nearly lost his life because of it.
Yeah.
Okay. This time you have lost me. I did not read this tweet anywhere near the way you did. I read it as not sarcastic. I thought he was just paying his respects, paying homage, saying, yeah, it's at King James. He is King James. You have told me from the start he is the most powerful man in the NBA.
Yep.
And he is. Mm-hmm. He is the most dedicated and effective activist in all of pro sports, and it's not even close.
Correct.
So I got it that Pat Bev, a rival of his.
Yeah, rival. All of a sudden, go pay homage.
No, but he's like, I'm giving it up because that's the voice I listen to when it comes to this. And he said, not personal. On a personal level, I don't think he much likes LeBron. On a basketball level, I don't think he has a whole lot of respect for LeBron as a basketball player.
Okay.
But as the leader of the league, as the strongest voice in the league, I think he has nothing but respect, and he's paying it by saying, if he says we're hooping, we are hooping. Mm-mm. Because Pat Bev does want to hoop. This wasn't Pat Bev saying, I don't want to, but he says so we have to. It was Pat Bev saying, I'm all in, but all that matters is he's all in, so we are all in.
Exactly. So that paints LeBron as the villain, because what about the guys that are not all in? What about society that says basketball
should be... But Pat Bev's on LeBron's side.
No. Pat Bev is trying to paint. Hold on. I don't deal with you personally. I don't particularly think that highly of you. Now, all of a sudden, I'm going to pay homage? Nah, skip.
Okay, but Pat Bev wants to play. Number one, he's made it clear. It's about his money.
What's that Pat Bev want to make?
He hasn't made much money in his career because, as you point out, he had to play in Russia and Greece and all over Europe just to get a shot in the NBA, and he made the most of it. I don't know if any man has ever come farther than Pat Bev has to making $12 million in this league the way he had to do it, route.
Well, hey, you tweet, Pat Bev wants to play. The Clippers want to play. Don't bring King James into it.
Okay, but he's just saying... because Kyrie has raised an issue, Pat Bev's saying it doesn't matter what Kyrie is saying or anybody else is saying. It just matters what 23 is saying.
Thank you, Skip.
Okay, but he's not trying to vilify him.
Skip, what you think it's going to be? If the players don't want to play and society says basketball should be postponed, but King James wants to play, so we got to play, what is that doing?
Well, I don't know what percent of society is saying we don't want basketball to be played.
But I'm saying there are a segment.
Well, I told you as we started the show, the tide might be turning back against LeBron in this, and he may have to reconsider his decision in the next, say, 12, 24, 48 hours.
Right. So that's all I'm saying. Pat Bev, if you want to play, you could have tweeted, hey, I'm ready to hoop, but I'll do whatever the NBA or whatever the players think is in the best interest, that I'll do that also. Don't bring King James into it. Don't put King James, because nobody else cared what he said. It was that at King James. That's what I'm saying. Remember, Skip, he said, everybody, if you want attention, put my name in your dentures. And that's what Pat Bev got, because nobody would have, they probably would have tweeted that five times had he not had King James. But because he had King James' name up in it, now all of a sudden it becomes a story. You know that. He knew that.
I know your premise. I get your premise, but did you read that as sarcastic?
Yes,
I did not.
Absolutely.
I read it as I give it up. Mm-mm. To King James.
So now all of a sudden he want to give it up. A man that he said, oh, how hard is it to guard NBA? How hard is it to guard King James? Not that hard. How good is it? Not that hard.
Well,
not that hard.
Well, he proved that on Christmas
Day.
What happened at the end of the game on Christmas Day?
Skip.
He blocked his tying three-point shot. Remember that?
Okay, so LeBron.
That was like the play of the year for the Clippers. I think we're seeing it right now. Remember, LeBron started to go up, and he knocked the ball out of his hands, threw his hands, OB off LeBron, game over.
So what happened, Lou? Bradford Smith dropped 36 on Jordan.
Okay.
So it happened, Skip.
Okay.
He knocked the ball out of his hands. You make it seem like he D'd the man up. What happened when they came back and played the next time? You remember Pat Bev came unplayable in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
Only played a handful of minutes.
He often has been because he's all of about 6'1".
That ain't got to do with it. You didn't say that when he knocked the ball out of his hands. He's all of 6'1".
I said the littlest man on the court, 6'1", knocked the ball out of 6'9"'s hand.
He thought it was funny. It's not.
I don't think he
I
was.
Do. I knew, Skip. I know him.
And he said, not personal, only all caps.
Why you got to say
business.
Not personal? Why you got to say not personal?
Because I don't think he likes him.
Okay.
Okay. So he's disqualifying that part of it. This is about business. He's saying, I want my 75% of my $12 million because I could use that money.
I'm just trying to figure out, I don't know how most people operate, but if it's somebody I don't like, I don't mention them in a tweet. I don't mention them in an IG post. If I don't like you, why is your name in my mouth? Why is your name on my thumbs if I don't like you?
Because right now, King James is benefiting that man because he's making it possible for that man to earn whatever 75% of $12 million
yeah.
is.
Think about it. LeBron James makes $35 million a year. LeBron James does $90 million. So the other $55 million coming from endorsements, that's still coming in, whether he dribbles the basketball, dunks, or not.
Okay, that's so true. No, but that's exactly right. But Pat Bev has no endorsements that I'm aware of.
I'm sure he probably got a little sneaker deal. You know, get a little paraphernalia. But here's the thing, Skip. But my thing is, Pat, if that's the way you feel, just keep it tied to Pat. Why you got to bring that main name into it?
Because he's fearless. I mean, he's just laying it right on the table, and he's doing – he did four praying hands, like, thank you, LeBron, because it's about business right now. And it's also about he would love a shot at LeBron in potentially the conference finals because he thinks his team is better than LeBron. So he's saying, thank you, King. Let's make this possible. Let's hoop. Let's see how it plays out.
He's trying to paint LeBron as a villain,
no,
but it ain't going to work. Not going to work, Skip Bayless.
Yes.
That's not going to work.
Well, I thought LeBron wanted to be seen as the powerful voice.
He is. He don't want to be. He is. They don't want. He is.
Okay, so if you are, you should own that and seize it. And I'm waiting. Like I told you all weekend, I'm looking for LeBron's tweet or his IG post. I'm waiting for the King to say play or not play.
We don't respond to pettiness.
You don't?
Nah.
Kyrie is petty?
Nah, I'm talking about him.
Oh.
Kyrie, look, we want to play. We made it abundantly clear even before they had the call. LeBron James has been on record saying, I think he did a story with the undefeated, said, I want to play. I want to resume the season. So LeBron has been abundantly, he's been crystal clear
okay.
on his stance on resuming the season. So he does not need Pat.
Reportedly split on whether the NBA should resume their season. Patrick Beverly tweeted, quote, Hoopers say what y'all want. King James says we hoopin'. He hoopin', we all hoopin'. Not personal, only business. Hashtag stay woke. Shannon, did you like what Beverly tweeted?
Nope. Because what he tried to do is paint LeBron James as a villain, Skip. He's like, no matter what, look, there are more important things than basketball. But LeBron James say we hoopin', so we hoopin'. LeBron James is the only voice that matters. Now, if we've seen a lot of players, like I think Kyrie had 100 players on his call. Some of them have said, you know, this is bigger than basketball. We should postpone basketball till we get
the Friday night
right,
call.
The Friday night
and
call.
And by the way, LeBron did not participate.
That's
okay.
correct.
All right.
So he's like, we should just postpone this until we get some of these things handled. Skip, yes, LeBron carries a lot of weight. But LeBron James is not the only decision that matters in this. So I don't like that. No, you do. You didn't talk about when you re-signed with the Clippers. You didn't mention nothing about LeBron. You your own man, Pat Bev. Pat Bev is own man. Grew up, came up the hard way, go through the G League and all these other leagues playing overseas and made it to the NBA. Now all of a sudden it comes time to return to play our hoopers. King James said we play and we hooping. Now don't do that. Don't try to paint the man because, Skip, there are some people in society that believe basketball should be postponed. And so now, if I believe it should be postponed, there's some players that believe it should be postponed. There are some fans that believe it should be postponed. But obviously, one of the most powerful players in the NBA says we should play. If we play, now LeBron gets painted as a villain. Nah, don't do that, Pat. You're entitled to your opinion. If you don't want to play, say, hey, I don't want to play. Or say, I do want to play. Don't bring King name in your mention. Kyrie ain't mentioned nothing about that. Nobody else has mentioned anything else about LeBron James wanting to play. He makes it seem like LeBron is the only one that wants to play. Giannis has made it clear he wanted to go back and play. So, nah, I don't like that. Don't try to paint the man as the villain. Mm-hmm. And plus, LeBron James has been working with, remember, Skip, you're talking about a guy that's very involved in his community. He's put his time, he's put his money, he's put his effort into raising awareness and doing things for his community that's been impoverished, that's underrepresented, underserved. And so I think it's a great hire. I think they'll do a great job. Hopefully they use him in the right context. And he can provide context while we're seeing this groundswell of athletes becoming more involved in a social movement, mm-hmm. something that we have. This is unprecedented, what we're seeing with our athletes in today's time. So I think it's a great hire for CNN, and I'm sure he'll do a great job.
I did love what Malcolm said yesterday when he accepted the job, that journalists must not make the grave mistake of allowing the world to go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo.
Right.
Love it. My only concern about Malcolm Jenkins occurred in 2017.
Uh-huh.
Colin Kaepernick has now been proven right. Eric Reed has been proven right.
Right.
They were very upset with Malcolm Jenkins as the leader of what was then called the Players Coalition
right.
of the NFL, Anquan Boldin and Malcolm started it
yeah.
because they called Malcolm Jenkins a sellout for agreeing to take the $89 million offered by the NFL to agree to no more kneeling. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Right.
Remember Eric Reed in the game, he's playing at Carolina at Philly.
Right.
He wanted to fight Malcolm before mm-hmm. kickoff, and then he just played like out of his mind the whole game to show them that he was right. Colin Kaepernick tweeted during the game, I'm with Reed, you know, all for Eric Reed.
Right.
And it just, it sticks in my craw that those two guys, who I certainly believe in, decided that he sold them out.
Right.
At that point in 2017, is that water under the bridge? Is that?
Yeah, I'm sure the NFL would have liked to have Colin Kaepernick. That would have been an ideal situation for CNN to have him.
Have him on CNN.
To have him in the Malcolm Jenkins role.
Oh, hey.
But he's not talking.
If so he had been available, he
exactly.
been like, boom.
It would help. Yes. I mean, Eric Reed, I don't know. I don't think Eric Reed, because I think Carolina released him.
They did.
So they want a current player that's in the NFL that can speak to NFL issues
okay.
of things of that nature.
Okay.
So, look.
Did it concern you that they called him a sellout in 2017?
No, it did not.
Okay.
Because I'm privy to certain things, Skip, and I don't want to get into the he
okay.
said and she
all
said
right.
of that. But I just think the thing is, okay, you could have stood and not got anything. And they admitted they were wrong. The NFL said we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you kneel, there was nothing going to change. What? Now, if the whole NFL would have started kneeling, Colin Kaepernick would have got a job. Because it seems to be that's what's going to happen this go around, Skip. We're going to see a lot more people kneeling as opposed to the handful that we saw when this originally happened in, what, 2016?
Mm-hmm.
So things have changed, but I think it's a great hire.
Okay. And I did love what I've loved a lot of things Malcolm Jenkins has done, including taking on Drew Brees, because when he posted those videos, that was vintage, pure, raw Malcolm
yeah.
Jenkins. Remember, Drew called him, he said, and he still posted the what he called maybe over-emotional
mm-hmm.
one, the first one.
Right.
Because it needed to be said.
Yeah.
Right?
It hurt because he didn't expect that from Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Drew's been so great, and for all of a sudden, Drew, for you to be blind to what's actually going mm-hmm. on is hurtful. And so he called him out, and so hopefully they get that resolved. That's something they're going to have to get when they get back together.
Yep. Yep.
Never seen teams play playoff games and not be in their building or the opposing team's building.
Mm-hmm.
This is neutral site. You're in a bubble.
Yep.
With no fans. So basically, it's like, I've heard someone said it's a glorified summer league game. That's what it is. I mean, for all the marbles, at least summer league, Skip, I mean, you're just trying to, okay, find a diamond in the rough somewhere and the guy makes the team or something.
But they're not going to play it like a summer league.
No, but Skip, when you play an NBA game, think about it, you're playing for the NBA championship game and you don't have any fans. None. So we don't know what it is. We don't know how teams are going to react because we've never been here before.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen teams go on the road and win a game 7. We've seen, you know, teams come back from 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we've never seen the NBA game play without fans.
Mm.
So we don't know. And plus, they got to go. How do you not be mentally tough for you to go?
Jordan came back?
No, Jordan. I'm talking about Gold James.
Huh.
Single mom, teenage mom. Not knowing no dominant male figure in your life, but this place, that place.
Huh.
In the words of Anthony Hamilton's song, Skip, coming where I'm from.
Huh. So nobody else has come from that background?
I don't know about them. Mm-hmm. I don't know about their background. I know about his background. I can talk about LeBron James, Skip. That's who I can talk about
because
I know him from Akron, December 30th, 1984.
Mm.
Great year. You know, that's a great thing. You remember
that means he's getting old.
Apple computer. You remember Apple computer? What? You remember that, Skip? Yeah, Macintosh.
Huh.
George Orwell book, 1984. This is great.
Right.
Yeah, I know you love Orwellian. Uh-huh. So, no.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. He's even trying to stick his tongue out like Mike.
But there you go. No. Oh, my goodness.
Right?
You ruined everything. We were having a great conversation. I was, you know, you let me go first. I was being courteous. You were being receptive, courtesy.
Okay.
And then you ruined it.
So it's my turn. I did love the premise of this L.A. Times story because it used a quote up high in the story from an NBA executive, obviously anonymously, who said, "This format favors the team that can overcome the mental anguish that a quarantine has to produce." There'll be some going on there because you're going to be in that quote-unquote bubble. It won't be that restricted, but you're going to have to kind of stay within the confines.
A man
right?
has been in the bubble since he was 17 years old.
Well, all right, you could be. And the quote goes on, "It's totally unnatural in every way for those guys. Mental toughness is more important than almost anything heading to Orlando." And I would agree with that. This is going to test your mental mettle.
Yeah.
What are you made of? Because it's going to be a sprint to the finish line. Everything's going to feel out of sync, out of touch, out of you can't touch anything.
Right.
And all of a sudden, no fans, and you play a few regular season games, and you try to knock the rust off, and you try to get back in the groove, and then here we go, and there will be a championship. I saw a quote from Steve Kerr saying, "It won't be tainted, it won't deserve an asterisk,
no.
because it will require such mental toughness to get home quickly." Okay, I give you that. I still say when all of a sudden you give that guy 4 months off. Near
Everybody else got 4 months off, too.
I know, but he's at the end of year 17.
Still kicking.
What is he, 42 now?
Still kicking. Playing like he's 22.
Yeah, okay.
Well, excuse me.
How great was it to get 4 months off after you make your big MVP push and then boom.
What about
COVID says you get 4 months off.
What about your guy?
Yep.
They can't play back-to-back. He got 4 months off.
He's
what about
pretty
him?
Fresh.
Okay, then.
Yeah, okay.
I think it benefited him more than old GOAT.
So, as I used to write about Michael Jeffrey Jordan when I covered him in Chicago, he was a supremely talented overachiever. If you have that going on where you got supreme talent and you are driven the way few have ever been driven, maybe nobody's ever been driven, now you got something.
Right.
Okay. So, I just saw last night a website that ranked the top 10 all-time most competitive NBA players. And I'm looking down the list, and of course it goes Jordan 1, Kobe 2, Bird 3, Magic 4. I can go down the list. And it went 11 deep because it gave Dennis Rodman honorable mention. And guess who wasn't on the list of all-time most competitive
Throw
players?
Throw the list in the trash.
Huh?
Throw the list in the trash.
23 was
Throw
not,
it in the
he
trash.
Did not make the list.
You and I know both of them
I
have
don't
before
know.
Jive.
I don't know that. So I have often questioned his clutch intangibles, his drive to close a game, his killer will. And I also question the killer will of one Anthony Davis, his new co-star. Both of them very gifted, obviously. I don't even need to say that. But do they have that thing? Do they have that drive? Do they have that killer? I don't think either of them have the killer. They have the talent.
Ask
and it's
Boston.
Possible they could just win it on
Ask
pure
Boston,
talent.
Do they got it? Ask your Spurs, do GOAT James got that killer drive?
Which Spurs?
Ask the Spurs. You know which Spurs.
The 2013 Spurs?
Oh,
that one?
That hurt me to give. Ask that hurt. Ooh, that hurt bad. Ask Chicago.
I watched him down the stretch of Game 6, 2013, in his house. I watched him turn it over three times in the last 3 minutes, unforced errors. I watched him miss a three with 5 seconds left. To tie, long rebound, Bosch is in the game. Why Tim Duncan's not in the game? Help me out.
Whoa.
I don't know.
Hey,
kick it to Ray Allen, greatest clutch shot I've ever seen, to tie the game and send it into overtime.
And then who took it over?
He took over.
But
my team was shot in the heart.
I saw your guys get ready to Drake ball.
Yep.
Had the ball up by the Drake with champagne.
They did.
And go, Jay, snatch it out.
He didn't. Ray Allen
snatch it out of his hand and put it back in his hand. We're going to Drake this tomorrow. Y'all not having this tonight.
So when we talk about mental toughness, we are talking about Clippers having edge. The team in the basement, the stepchildren, they got the mental toughness edge. How about Patrick Beverley? Is there any mentally tougher player in the league than that little 6'1" guy who blocked his shot at the end of regulation down three as he attempted to bring up a three-point shot? Pat Bev made him eat it on Christmas Day to save a game.
Skip, you talk about guy, look. If you want to talk about mental toughness, there's only one guy that's been mentally tough and won something. That's Kawhi. We got Danny Green, mentally tough. What? Okay.
Ask Pop how.
No, Pop. I'm telling you, I'll ask Pop.
Of that 2013 Game 6, he remained in Pop's doghouse till the day he walked out the door with Kawhi to
and
Toronto.
In 2014.
You know why?
Shot.
Because he did not screen off LeBron on that shot that he missed.
He missed. He got it back
and made it. This was with like 3 minutes.
Okay.
He did do that. Yeah. I'll give you that much.
Yeah.
But the one thing I've told you, that man quit on my Spurs. But you want to talk about discipline and dedication? You want to talk about patience and game plan? He had a game plan. He wanted out. He was done with Popovich and the San Antonio way. That
dream come true. If this is the direction NASCAR is headed, we will not participate after the 2020 season is over. I don't believe in kneeling during anthem nor taking people right to fly whatever flag they love. I could care less about the Confederate flag, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them a racist. All you are doing is expletive one group to cater to another, and I ain't spend the money. We are to participate in any political BS, so everything is for sale. Marty Smith back with us. As I mentioned earlier, he's covered NASCAR intimately since the 90s. Marty, thank you again for staying here with us. Marty, what's your reaction to that statement, and do you expect to see more of this amongst the fans?
If Ray Ciccarelli, whom I had not heard of before that post, wants to pack up his ball and take it on to the house, that's his prerogative. This is the United States of America. He has that right. But if that, and quite frankly, if that is his perspective, then he can pack up his ball and take it on down the highway. For today's sporting landscape, today's entertainment landscape, today's human landscape, there's just no room for anything that makes anyone feel disparaged or makes anyone feel lesser or uncomfortable. And so NASCAR's decision, maybe it will mean Ray Ciccarelli retires from the sport. Enjoy it, man. I hope you enjoy whatever you're going to do in the future, because there's 1,000 race car drivers at the late model level and lower who would be more than happy to take that spot.
Dominique, would you like to go? Or
I'll be happy to go. I was deferring to you because it's normally your show, but I will take it. I think it's interesting. I think I'll agree with most of what Marty says, but I'll take it a slight step further. I don't think it's all about making people feel comfortable. I do think that's part of it, and I don't think it's about not offending certain people. I think that's part of it, but I think, as Max put yesterday, that flag was the flag of a rebellion, a flag that represented people who wanted to destroy the country that we now live in. So to me, it's mind-blowing that it still hangs around and it still exists in any level. But I do think also that to only characterize it as making people feel comfortable and making people feel welcome, like, I think that's an important thing, especially from a business standpoint. But to only characterize it as that, I think, kind of misunderstands what the flag fully represents and what people who wave that flag. I can't imagine. Like, I can go through the list, and I don't want to be hyperbolic, but I can go through the list of many other countries or organizations specifically that have had attacks on American grounds. And I can't imagine for the life of me anybody feeling comfortable going to a sporting event, a NASCAR event no less, and bringing that flag up. Like, there's so many people who I think could point to different things and say this and change what it means. This flag represents X to me, so I want to wave it here. Obviously, it's America. You have the right to wave, to fly whatever flag you want to fly. However, we have to fully understand the history, and I think that some people want to hide behind saying what it means to them, when just to absolve themselves of this connection to what it actually stood for. And not only did it stand for the subjugation of black people, it stood for the destruction of this country that so many of them believe. Like, it's ironic, and it just kind of highlights the stupidity of Ray Ciccarelli when he goes through that as if he's saying, I don't want to live in this, or I don't want to work in this place. And he suggested, and I don't remember all the quotes in that terrible post, but it seemed to me like he was suggesting that this is a change to the America that he knows and America that he appreciates and an organization that exists in that America. How in the world can you stand on the ground of wanting to wave a flag that wanted to destroy that? Go ahead, Max.
Marty, I love the way you've been covering this and bringing this to a mainstream audience. I do think that when it is said, no one should ever feel uncomfortable. It's a little different on a college campus, but I don't believe in safe spaces in terms of ideas. I like to feel uncomfortable with different opinions and different ideas, and that's America, and that's the kind of place in which I'd like to live. I don't think the Confederate flag simply falls under that category, although it does fall under that category. I think there's a more specific category that excludes it from using it, participating in public life in America, which is it's a flag of treason and of racism and of pro-slavery positions. Look at the seceding Southern states. Like, look what each one of them stated first paragraph about why they were fighting. And the fact that subsequent generations turned it into, and it was a willful act on the part of previous generations, turned the Confederate flag simply into a more generic kind of Southern pride thing for them is bogus. I'm not saying that dynamic doesn't exist. That's not a good enough reason to fly it. It's based on misinformation and disinformation. In other words, propaganda intentionally put out to get people to believe things that are untrue. And left over racism. So I think it's not simply that we can't do anything that makes anyone feel uncomfortable in public events ever. I think in this case, this rises to a level that other things don't. You can respond in 1 second, Marty, if you don't mind. I'd like to just make the writ because I wanted to engage with that point. You know, we've heard of liberal guilt, right? And liberal guilt could actually be very useful in terms of progressing things. I think this is an example, this driver who doesn't want to participate if this is going to happen now, in conservative guilt. And by liberal and conservative, I don't mean politically. I mean in terms of one's personal constitution. Now, that obviously will influence oftentimes their political ideas, but I mean personally, whether someone wants to be progressive, wants to go forward, or whether someone wants to be more conservative, meaning maintain the status quo. What happens, I believe, in these circumstances for a lot of white people whose dispositions are conservative personally is they see that they're scared of change. They see that the world is changing. They want to know the world that they know. But then it's brought to their attention, wait a minute, the world that you knew, that you think was so good, wasn't good for everyone. And in fact, you benefited in ways you didn't even realize maybe, at their expense, at the other people's expense. And the reaction to that, if it's guilt, can then turn into anger over the subject. And you can even think in your own personal life, who do you get angry at in your family, your kid, your parent, whatever, when you see things in them that you really don't like about yourself, right? It can make you angry. And I think oftentimes the resistance we get from people who I won't just assume are racist, them, forget about it, they're basket cases, right? I mean, people who maybe are swayable still, is they have to get over their conservative guilt.
I mean, I think we've fallen into his trap to some degree, because if Marty Smith didn't know who he was yesterday, he's probably a nobody in this world, and I suspect, or in the world of NASCAR, I suspect that he wanted this attention. He wants to send a message to a certain group. Maybe that's what he wanted to do. I feel like I've been duped a little bit there, giving him as much attention as we have. But the quote that I wanted to bring attention to was him saying that it feels like you're effing one group to cater to another by banning this flag. So what were you doing before? By allowing the flag, weren't you doing the same thing? Like, I just don't understand him or anything that he wants to
represent. Well, you're allowed to do it to one group, Dominique.
Yeah, that seems clear to me. It's one group is fine.
Marty, I want to give you the last word here before we go to break.
Yeah, one group is fine, that's right. Apparent.
I'll try to be succinct. I just want to say, too, that I am the small-town Southern man. I grew up in the rural South. I saw the Confederate flag growing up. And I will tell you that I have grown tremendously in my own awareness and knowledge of what my Black friends see. I still can't see that. I can't look through that lens, but I can try over the last couple of weeks. And I'll tell you what I've thought about. My favorite show as a kid, and it still may be my favorite show now, was The Dukes of Hazzard. The iconic General Lee Dodge Charger car on that show has the rebel flag painted on top of that car. My entire life, I never even cared. Like, it never registered with me that that could be offensive to anyone. And that's born from my own upbringing and the ignorance of what it might mean to somebody else. And I have T-shirts now with that car on it and that flag on top of that car. So I'm going to try to gain experience and understanding about if I wore that shirt in public, would I be vilified, or would my empathy and compassion for other people be questioned? So there's a lot still to unpack.
Yeah.
And
it's a shirt,
I'm so
Marty.
Grateful
it's probably not worth the risk,
to all
buddy.
Three of you for giving me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And right, bro. That's what I'm saying. These are things that have to be that are being unpacked now, that maybe in the past they weren't. And I think that's extremely important that we're discussing these things. So thank you guys
for
the opportunity.
And you're learning. And Marty, I want to say this to you personally. I appreciate your coalition of players, including Brooklyn Nets All-Star Kyrie Irving and the Los Angeles Lakers' Avery Bradley, believe they have a responsibility to take on a leading role in exploring answers and solutions for fellow players. The group believes to be justifiably reluctant to speak for themselves, sources have told ESPN. The Coalition of Players delivered a statement to ESPN on Monday describing its thoughts and processes and motivations. Quote, as an oppressed community, we are going on 500 plus years of being systematically targeted, used for our intellectual property, talent, and also still being killed by the very people that are supposed to protect and serve us. We have had enough. We are combating the issues that matter most. We will not accept the racial injustices that continue to be ignored in our communities. We will not be kept in the dark when it comes to our health and well-being. We will not ignore the financial motivations, expectations that have prevented us historically from making sound decisions. Commissioner Adam Silver, Blazers guard Dame Lillard, provided their thoughts last night. Take a listen.
I can only say it may not be for everyone. I mean, it will entail enormous sacrifice on behalf of those players and for everyone involved, the coaches, the referees. Listen, it's not an ideal situation. We're trying to find a way to our own normal in the middle of a pandemic and now with enormous social unrest in the country. And so as we work through these issues, I can understand how some players may feel that it's not for them. If a player chooses not to come, it's not a breach of his contract, we accept that.
Well, I think two things. I think, first of all, with the pandemic that we've been in over, you know, the course of a few months, I think basketball would have been great for that, or will be great for that, because it'll be us getting back to somewhat normalcy, you know, of having our athletes on TV playing, doing what we do. But I think as far as the racial injustice, I think that's where a lot of the struggle is for a lot of athletes. And a lot of our hearts are with our people. You know, our mind is with our people. And we feel like we should be a part of that. You know, we should be a part of that fight. But I think a lot of guys in the league have a point. You know, I think Kyrie and Dwight have a point. You know, so I understand it all.
All right, that was Dame Lillard. There's a great piece interview with him on Vanity Fair's website. I encourage you guys to check that out. Stephen A., I will start with you. Does this change your opinion now, getting more detail from the Players Coalition with the statement?
Not at all. Not one bit. And I would say to you, Molly and Max, it's because, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't get more details from Kyrie Irving. So as far as I'm concerned, what was he specific about in terms of mobilization, in terms of galvanizing folks to a direct and specific goal? What exactly is that? Because I didn't hear it. That's number one. Number two, I would like to remind everybody that Kyrie Irving is on the executive committee of the NBA Players Association. Okay, excuse me, Chris Paul is the president. Do you disagree with Chris Paul? Did you tell Chris Paul that when you had these calls with 80-plus people? Did you inform Chris Paul of what your feelings were and what you were going to say before you said it? Did you even know he was going to be on the damn call? These are issues now that need to be broached, because the commissioner, Adam Silver, told Greeny last night he's been communicating with the leadership for the Players Association. That includes the executive committee. So where the hell has Kyrie Irving been? Number three, I'm watching Dwight Howard. Good brother. Watched him on Don Lemon's show on CNN last night. Okay, we all know that Don Lemon's been doing a good job in terms of what he's been bringing to the forefront, and we applaud him for that. But in the end, when you look at what Dwight Howard had to say, I didn't hear anything of substance that he said. And that gets to a bigger issue here, Mac. Let me tell you something. When I look at this and I think about everybody sitting there, you know, attacking on social media, going off about money, money, money. That's what it's always about. You're damn right it is. You're damn right it is. Let's stop the games. Russell Westbrook is putting forth a docuseries based on the 1921 riots in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Why is that such a significant thing? An entire community, an affluent black community, was ravaged. Nearly 300 people died. In excess of $32 million in damage was done. That's what they, you know, that's basically what they equated it to being. You know, black businesses were flourishing. This is before integration now, okay? Not once it was diluted, not once black issues and black prominence was diluted to a significant degree because of integration, some would argue. This is at a time when that wasn't the case and black folks were thriving and their communities were destroyed. Why is Russell Westbrook bringing attention to that? Why is LeBron James folks planning on showing up on Juneteenth and addressing issues there for voting rights and what have you? You know why? Because people were flourishing economically. Every single black leader in the history of this nation has preached about the importance of economic empowerment. And here we have a bunch of brothers that are economically empowered and are talking about giving it up. For what exactly? When that economic empowerment is what can address the very issues that we're talking about. Dr. Fauci is on the record saying that the safest environment, and the NBA has the safest plan right now because guys would be in a bubble, they wouldn't be traveling, et cetera, et cetera. So you know that safety is something that's being addressed. You've got the commissioner who's been very progressive in his thinking that's willing to help in any way he can. You've got leaders like CP3 and LeBron James that have been putting their money and their efforts where their mouth is, along with a bevy, a majority of those players. And if you decide not to play, and the players were to listen to Kyrie Irving, were to listen to Dwight Howard, who, by the way, are supported by Kevin Durant and other players, if they were to listen to that kind of stuff, then essentially what you're talking about is the season being canceled, the CBA that you just agreed to being ripped up, essentially a whole everybody being free agents for all intent and purposes, and with the owners coming to the table, having accrued those losses, projecting future losses, and then, oh my goodness, they're going to look for you to stomach some of those losses, which means you're taking money out of your own pocket you will never, ever receive or recruit. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You get with the commissioner. You get with power brokers in the white community. I'm looking at Mars, the Mars Corp, Max. They got Snickers and Skittles and all of this other stuff generating over $30 billion a year in profits. How about going to them and saying, excuse me, what have you done for the African-American community?
To see, Skip, that maybe the movement, maybe what's transpired over the last 2 weeks, the guys got an opportunity to see what Colin Kaepernick was actually trying to bring attention to. It was never about the flag or the military. And so I'm glad these two guys. Now, Skip, J.J. Watt he's the All-American kid.
Yep.
Midwest, USA. He was a two-star recruit at Central Michigan. He didn't like it there. He walks on to University of Wisconsin, gets so good, he becomes a first-round draft pick, three-time Defensive Player of the Year. Walter Payton Man of the Year, raised over $40 million for Hurricane Harvey. Now, the question is, J.J. Watt has really never been criticized because J.J. Watt, Skip, I mean, from the time he got into the league, he's been lights out.
Mm-hmm.
So this might be the first time he takes some criticism on his Twitter, on his IG. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that, because when you haven't faced backlash before, Skip, it's different. Because you believe everybody loves everything about you and everything that you do. J.J. Watt's about to find out that people just want you to stay to stick to football and not have an opinion on anything other than football. So if he can handle that, I think he'll be just fine. But we need guys like J.J. Watt,
mm-hmm.
influential white guys that can talk to their friends, and have this very uncomfortable conversation about race.
Mm-hmm.
Baker is a little different. Baker's been criticized. Baker don't care. Baker been dealing with this. Baker been saying, look, I'm Baker Mayfield. Accept me as I am. If you don't like it, kiss my butt. So he's been dealing with that since college skip. He's coming to the NFL. He's built up some fan. He's built up a fan following, and then he's built up a fan disliking. So Baker Mayfield is like, he could care less. The question is, will J.J. Watt be able to withstand the criticism that's going to come along with him? Because I wouldn't be surprised if President Trump doesn't tweet at him personally.
Maybe.
Like he did Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted at Drew Brees personally because he wanted Drew. I ain't happy with you, Drew. I ain't happy that you're taking this stance. So I wouldn't be surprised if President Trump or maybe some other prominent person
maybe
tweet J.J. and is like, I'm not pleased with this stance.
Okay. I'm going to go a little farther down the road you started on. These are two very different human beings in different situations.
Yes.
Baker's tweet did not surprise me at all. He's always had rebel in him,
yes.
Anti-establishment in him. Gets mad at the Kansas players while he was at Oklahoma, remember, because they wouldn't shake during the coin toss.
Yep.
Looked across the field at him once they had a big lead, grabbed his crotch.
Yep.
You know, that's the signal he's going to give to them.
Hit the TCU player in the head
for running across his back line during warm-up. Nailed him right in the helmet. And Hugh Jackson, who's since fallen apart with Baker, he said when he went to sort of hang around with him before they drafted him number one overall, he went to Oklahoma and he said the first thing he saw was Baker was like Pied Piper, the Pied Piper to a lot of his teammates, most of them obviously black,
mm-hmm.
who They just believe blindly in Baker because they love being around him.
Right.
Odell is one of Baker's closest friends. They hang out together. They socialize together. So I mean, obviously it would be in Baker's heart to me. It would be part of his makeup, part of his nature. Yeah, I'm going to kneel. I absolutely am. I'm not even thinking twice about it.
Right.
JJ, I'm not so sure about. I think he had to come around to this way mm-hmm. of thinking.
Yes.
I think what happened to Drew Brees had huge impact on J.J. Watt. And he's a smart man, and he watched it unfold, and he's like, aha, tide has turned.
Mm-hmm.
I better take a very different stance here. No matter what I thought back in 2017, I better be on the right side of this now. And I think J.J. is PR shrewd.
Mm-hmm.
He's established a lot of disaster funds,
mm-hmm.
some great, some, you know, he was sort of piggybacking what was already established.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, very shrewd operator. So I think he learned whatever lesson needed to be learned from Drew Brees, and he tweeted what he tweeted. And they both were responding to
right.
the fans on Twitter.
But I think the thing is, Skip, that we're ways away. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything sounds good in theory at this present moment. We're in June. We'll see if the season starts in September, how they still feel at that moment.
Good point.
Because look, J.J. Watt and Baker's a quarterback. J.J. is one of the preeminent defensive players in all mm-hmm. of football, one of the best players in football. The camera's going to find those guys. And people are going to do their own, going to draw their own conclusions accordingly. So I'm glad if this is in their heart, Skip, and this is something they want to do, they want to help, I commend them. But we'll see if they still feel this way come September,
mm-hmm.
because the backlash, especially for J.J., is going to be immense.
It will be immense. I would agree. And I'm with you. I'm not sure he's experienced anything quite like
Mm-mm.
this kind of backlash.
Mm-mm.
Probably none.
None. Never.
So far,
no.
right?
No.
Okay. So Baker, I trust, will. I do believe he will kneel come September.
Right.
Obviously, we need to hear more from bigger and better white quarterback,
yes.
starting with Tom Brady, Drew Brees down the line.
Mm-hmm.
We need them to put actions behind words.
Correct.
I would like to see everybody kneel. Again, whatever's in your heart is in your heart.
Right.
But again, I propose to you maybe there could be a minute of silence
mm-hmm.
ahead of the anthem if that would take some people off the hook
right.
and allow everybody to do what they do and
right.
then all stand with hand over their heart during the anthem. But that might take a little bit away from
right.
the power of the protest.
Correct. And Skip, for me, I just don't want guys to be vilified because, Skip, you know at the start, everybody's going to show the anthem. If they
mm-hmm.
Now, they might keep the players in. I don't know. They might keep the players in the locker room because, Skip, remember, that's what they started doing.
Yep.
Because before, until you got this pay-for-play, the military stuff, Skip, You didn't have to come out for the national anthem.
Mm-mm.
It was that the military started like, okay, we'll give you this. They come out for the national anthem. They waved the big flag. They would try. It was a recruiting tool. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it was.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. But you know, Skip, the camera's going to pan. Oh, he's kneeling. He's kneeling. Oh, he's standing. Why is he standing?
Oh, you're going to keep score.
And so now, Skip, they're going to ask you, okay, I saw all your teammates, but you didn't. Why didn't you kneel? And I don't want guys to get vilified.
It How do you remedy that? How do you head that off at the pass? I don't know.
I don't know how either, Skip. I think there's going to have to be some smarter people. That's above my pay grade. But look, just because they're not kneeling doesn't mean that they don't support your cause. Maybe they're doing other things. That's a conversation maybe you have amongst teammates and says, okay, man, I'm not kneeling, but I support the cause. I've done this. I've done that. And you keep it moving. But I'm not vilifying anybody that does not stand.
The great Shannon Sharp taught me two things can be true.
Absolutely.
I can honor the United States flag,
yep.
and I can support your Black Lives
yes.
Matter cause.
Yes.
So it's possible to do both?
Absolutely. Whereas before, Skip, it was either, you know, if you were disrespecting the flag
mm-hmm.
in order to support your cause. And so now we've moved past that.
We
know that's not the – that was never his intention. That was never his purpose. And so now I want to know what the excuse is. I just want to hear some of these owners talk, Skip, that was so vocal in the beginning. Michael Jordan tried to get best out of his teammates by riding them, ridiculing them, sometimes outright being disrespectful towards them. Coach Belichick got 9 Super Bowl appearances, 6 Super Bowl wins, and now Skip Bayless is calling him a troll, calling him a tyrant. I thought the ends justify the means. We just spent last week talking about the ends justify the means. Shannon, you can't argue with the results. 6-0 is 6-0. Now all of a sudden, you don't like Bill Belichick. He's a tyrant. He's a troll. Tom Brady is happy to get out from under his thumb, and now this? Come on, Skip, you can't have it both ways. Remember, I knew there was a time come that I would be able to throw this back in your face. Now Coach Belichick is a tyrant. Now, how dare he speak to the GOAT like that? But you had no problem with Michael Jordan, did it? So what was the difference, Skip? If the ends justify the means, in other words, by any means necessary to get the outcome that we seek, what is the difference between Coach Belichick and Michael Jordan besides you like one and dislike the other?
Michael Jordan was playing extreme high-level basketball while Belichick was merely coaching. Belichick played lacrosse at Wesleyan. He's not very athletic. He's a little Napoleonic figure. While Jordan was winning 10 scoring titles and a Defensive Player of the Year and 9 first-team all defensive players and MVPs right and left. He should have won MVP every year. And Shannon, he was saying, you have to follow my lead. I need you to play up to my level. While Belichick was a failed coach in Cleveland. He lost 4 out of 5 seasons. 4 out of 5 years in Cleveland, Belichick had a losing record and he got fired. He went 5-11 his first year in New England with Drew Bledsoe at quarterback, and then he started the next year 0-2, and Tom Brady fell out of heaven into his lap. I'm sorry, I don't know what Belichick did to earn the right to ridicule Tom Brady. He got away with it because Tom Brady let him, not for 1 year or two, but for 20 years, he let him get away with all that ridicule and sarcasm for the greater good of winning championships. And it worked. But trust me, Brady knew from the start he was 75% of what was right about the Patriots to about 25% of the credit that went to Coach Belichick.
But see, here's the thing, Skip. And you try to – every time we talk about Coach Belichick and what he's been able to accomplish over the last 20 years, you go back to Cleveland. Some of the greatest successes started out as failures. You know that. I know that. If you go out through history, I can assure you, Thomas Edison didn't create the light bulb on his very first. Graham Bell didn't create the telephone on his first try. But you want to think people are successful at the very first thing they do, and voila, here we go. No, I won't let you get off the hook. You praised Michael Jordan, punching people in the eye, demeaning people, calling them out of their names. You said, Shannon, the ends justify the means. 6-0 is 6-0. Well, 9 Super Bowl appearances, 6 Super Bowl wins with the MVPs. How many times did they win the division? 17, 18 in a 20-year span. Now, all of a sudden, you got a problem with it, Skip. I won't let you do it. Coach Belichick did what he thought was in the best interest. He's trying to win games. So if you got a push, you got a pull, you got a kick. Even your best player, you had no problem. You had no problem when it was Scotty Burrell. You had no problem when it was Steve Kerr, Will Perdue, or anyone else. But lo and behold, Coach Belichick got that stranglehold on your goat, and he making him bad. Do it. Do it again. Tommy, what the hell are you thinking? Do you know what the coverage is? We studied this all week, and you still make a mistake. Tommy, what the hell is going on? You're throwing the ball like the guy Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Put it in his chest. That bothers you. So, in other words, as long as it's somebody that you don't like, ride him all you want. But if it's somebody you like, don't get on him like that. If it's somebody we like, you can ride the person all you want. If somebody you don't like, you can't get on him like that. What he's earned, he's a 6-time Super Bowl winning coach. If I'm not mistaken, he's a 2-time coach of the year, and he's the greatest coach to ever coach in the NFL. That's what he is. And so by that proxy, he's earned the right to criticize Tom Brady, Thomas, Edward, Patrick Brady, the junior. Coach Belichick has earned, Coach Belichick has earned the right to criticize and to ride all 4 of those people. And that's what he did. And it resulted, like you tell me all the time, in 6 Super Bowls with 6 game-winning drives. And if Coach Belichick hadn't ridden him like that, it would never happened.
Did you just compare Tom Brady? You're making my point for me. Shannon Sharp, there is. Go ahead.
No, what I said, as long as his players like Scotty Burrell and Will Perdue and Steve Kerr, Skip Bayless is okay with it. But at the end of the day, are they not men? Do they not have wives? Do they not have kids? Do they deserve less respect than Tom Brady because he's the GOAT? Oh, no, Skip. You see, I knew this day was coming. I just didn't know when, Skip. I knew it was going to come, that I was going to get an opportunity, that everything you said for the last 2 weeks, and you up there dancing. You like Michael Jackson at the Motown Award. You moonwalking. Doing all that boogalooing. Yeah. And now look at you, squirming in the hot seat. No. I got them bright lights on you in the interrogating room. I got you. I'm Joe Friday. Just the facts, sir.
Yeah, just the facts. I'm going to give you the facts. Steve Kerr was lucky to be on that team. Scotty Burrell, lucky to be on that team. Will Perdue from Vanderbilt University, really, really lucky to be on that team, as were all the other just another guys who went down that roster. Winnington, Luke Longley, Randy Brown, Judd Bushler. He took every one of those just ordinary guys, and he said, I'm going to pick on your weakness, and I'm going to turn it into a playoff strength that I can utilize and capitalize on in key moments in postseason runs, and he did it to every one of them. We're talking about the GOAT here, who took it just so he could keep Bill Belichick afloat in the locker room. If Tom Brady had mutinied and rebelled, after they won their second Super Bowl against Carolina, if Tom Brady had finally stood up and said, I'm not going to take that anymore from you because I'm the reason you are you right now, it would have been over for the Patriots, and Tom Brady knew that. He was the reason they were winning Super Bowls. You made my case, and I appreciate you bringing that up. They won 6 Super Bowls because he pulled off 6 fourth quarter game-winning drives. That's impossibly great. You can't buy that. You can't coach that. You can't create that in a coaching lab. He did it by himself for Bill Belichick, and then he allowed Bill Belichick to shame him in front of the team for the sake of the team, because he knew Belichick was trying to send a message to everybody down that roster. I'm going to do it to the top guy, and I'm going to do it to the bottom guy, because I am effing Bill Belichick, and if you don't like it, hit the door. And he could get away with saying hit the door because he had the greatest quarterback who ever played, who camouflaged all of the bad decisions that Bill Belichick made picking players. He made a bunch of bad decisions, and it just didn't matter. He could pick whatever Steve Kerr or Will Perdue or Scotty Burrell he wanted to and mix and match them because he had Michael Jordan. That's why. And Michael Jordan wasn't shaming and ridiculing everybody. He was saying, yes, sir, Coach Belichick. Yes, whatever you say, sir. It's unheard of. No other quarterback today would take that. Can you imagine what Cam Newton, everybody's talking about? How about Cam Newton to Bill Belichick? Baloney. It wouldn't last an hour. Cam Newton would say, you're talking to me like that?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Skip. But you just said everybody would have took the ridicule and Michael Jordan calling them out of their name. You said everybody would have took that to win championship. So why wouldn't everybody, if you tell a quarterback you're going to win 6 Super Bowls over the next 20 years, why wouldn't they take tough coaching? You see what you did, Skip? You see, Coach Bell, you said, well, the reason why Michael Jordan was riding on Scotty Burrell, he knew that down the road he needed to count on him. So that Game 3 against New Jersey, when he scored 23 points in 24 minutes, that was that. Steve Kerr, when he hit that shot, Michael Jordan hit him in his eye because he knew.
Shannon, on a scale of 1 to 10, how ridiculous is this?
That's a 10 times 10, which is 100 times 10. Skip, this is ridiculous. We know Tua. Hold on. Before Tua got there, how many times did they throw the ball a game? The system that you see at Alabama, Tua created. They will run the football, play defense. Now all of a sudden they throw the football and they don't play defense nearly as well. Skip, come on, Skip. We got to stop this now. Tua is as good a prospect coming out. His ability to throw the ball, his anticipatory skills, his accuracy is second to none. Great touch, great leadership. And to say, it's because of, no. They've had great athletes before, but they didn't throw the ball like this with Julio. They didn't throw the ball like this with Amari Cooper, with a Calvin Ridley. They've had top-flight receivers. Tua created the system. They implemented a system that says we got a guy that instead of running the ball 35, 40 times a game, we need to throw it 25, 35 times a game. And that's what he allowed them to do. There is no general manager in the NFL that would take Jared Stidham over Tua, even with Tua's history, injury history. No offensive coordinator, no general manager, no head coach is taking Stidham over Tua.
Chris Sims is saying they will after they see Stidham play for a year. That's his premise. Okay. He's saying people are underestimating just how great Jared Stidham might be. And he's even saying he might be underestimating just how great Jared Stidham might be. He was on the Mahomes bandwagon before it was fashionable for you to start driving that.
I've been on my homeboy.
Have you? Not until he started playing pro football did you get on that bandwagon.
I saw him against Denver in that last game of the season.
Yeah.
I just knew we were going to win.
Okay, so back to Chris Sims. I completely agree with half of his premise. I am not sold on Jared Stidham, but I completely agree because I've been telling you this for a year. Tua is a creation of Alabama.
So
I told you that.
So it's
creation of Alabama. I'm going to get to Joe Burrow in just a moment.
Okay.
So let's look at to whom he was throwing here. So first of all, he got protected by Jedrick Wills, who went to Cleveland with the 10th overall pick to be Baker Mayfield's new left tackle, correct? Henry Ruggs went 12th to the Raiders because he's the fastest receiver in the draft, correct? Yes. Jerry Jeudy, your favorite receiver in the draft, went 15th to your Denver Broncos.
Yep.
And it's a lot of firepower. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Todd McShay's big board for next year, 2021 draft. Jalen Waddle, still at Alabama, somebody that to have benefited throwing to is ranked 10th overall on the big board by Todd McShay. 15th overall is Devontae Smith, the other receiver. Yep. So again, this is validating what I've been telling you all along. Tua was throwing to four first-round pick receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's never happened in the history of college football.
Yeah.
The history. Help me out. Maybe Clemson was close a couple times.
Probably so.
But I don't think they had four at one time. First round. These are pretty high first-round picks. Again, Ruggs 12th, Judy 15th, Jalen Wald 10th, Devontae Smith 15th. That's four in the top 15.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Well, Clemson had who they had? D-Hop.
Yep.
They had Sammy Watkins.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Williams kid.
They did.
San Diego.
Yep.
So,
okay.
And Martavius Bryant went in the second round to Pittsburgh.
He did. Close.
Yeah.
But not this. Four in the top 15, plus Jedrick Wills, plus that Jonah Williams went the year before as a tackle.
Leatherwood is going to be probably top
three. He looks like he is. Josh Jacobs obviously was the 24th overall to the Raiders and had a big year.
The running back should be high.
Well, guess who? Najee Harris, who I love because he can catch it even better than he can just carry it. He is ranked on Todd McShay's big board next year, 27. So he's going to be, according to this, a late first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another weapon that Tua, when in doubt, could dump it to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now back to what I tried to tell you all year long. I didn't second-guess this. I first-guessed it. This is Chris Sims again. The difference between Tua and Joe Burrow is when I evaluated them, Joe Burrow makes way more high-level NFL-type throws. People not open, protection not good, he still makes a play. You have a hard time finding that on any of Tua's tapes. I told you that from the start of the year. I'm not seeing that.
So what about them picks? What about them wide receivers he got?
Hmm.
What about his
Joe Burrow?
Yeah, Joe Burrow. Did he
have
some in the first round?
But he didn't have this.
No. Hold on. He had a Blitnikoff winner.
Yeah.
Did he have any of those guys? Did any of his receivers go in the first round? Were any of those receivers that remained there, would they go in the first round?
Yeah, Jamar Chase will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about Edwards-Helaire? What did he do? Where'd he go?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so in other words, see, now one guy has first round picks, and now all of a sudden it was Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
So what was Joe Burrow the year before?
Okay, so I'll tell you where Joe Burrow was at the end of this college football season. He played three straight games. He played Georgia in the SEC championship game. He played Oklahoma in the semifinal. He played Clemson in the final. Grand total, he hit 70% of his passes. He averaged 435 yards a game. He scored 18 total touchdowns. He had 16 passing touchdowns to zero interceptions.
Yes.
And his QBR for those three games combined was 98 on scale 0 to 100. I'm not sure we've ever seen three championship-type games played by a quarterback at this level.
And my guy had a higher QBR than your guy for a career and a season.
During the regular season.
And for a season and a career.
So this is what I saw from Tua. I saw the 2018 SEC championship game against Georgia, and he was horrendous in that game. He was 10 of 25 for 164 yards. He threw one touchdown pass, but two picks, 29 QBR.
Hurt.
29.
Was he hurt?
He finally got hurt. And
he was hurt going into the game.
Speaking of hurt, Hurts, with an S on it, came in as in Jalen Hurts and saved the day, saved St. Nick's bacon by winning the fourth quarter 14-0 so that they could get to a championship game in which Tua threw two more interceptions against Clemson and he had a QBR of 59, which is just barely above average. He was below average against Georgia, barely above average against Clemson.
But what about when he came up as a true freshman, came off the bench?
Mm-hmm.
How many true freshmen come off that bench?
Mm.
Now, you love true freshmen playing big, like Michael Jordan.
Mm.
You love that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Carmelo Anthony in the championship game. Oh, you love that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's what Tua did. Mm. Where was Joe Burrow his sophomore, his freshman year?
Mm.
On the pine. Where was he at his sophomore year? On the pine.
Mm.
Hold on. You mean to tell me that man couldn't beat out Haskins? And who you have no, like you always tell me, Shannon, you have very little respect for him. Skip Bayless, you have very little to no respect for Haskins.
I have.
And Joe Burrow couldn't beat him out.
I'm closer to no respect for Haskins.
And he couldn't beat him out. He couldn't beat
that
J.T. Barrett. He couldn't beat that J.T. Barrett.
Coach's fault.
Where is J.T. Barrett at right now?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question.
My guy was so good, he got your guy to leave. You ain't got to go, but you got to get him out of here.
You know what? The two I saw more and more, and obviously he got hurt and hurt and hurt again and hurt again.
Ain't going to be hurt in the NFL.
You know, Rex Ryan says that he was told five surgeries he had while at Alabama. You love that going forward? Hurt in college, hurt in pros.
I love the ability.
And because he was hurt so much, I kept seeing more and more flinching. I saw happy feet. I saw a loss of poise. I saw a loss of confidence.
That one looked good.
I did not see it. Yeah, does it really?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, he looked like a little Kyler Murray.
Yeah. Well, he's in white there. I hope he's not in hospital white too much.
There you go.
I hope not.
I mean, he's bigger than Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Rookie of the year right there. Look at that rookie of the year.
He's 6 feet tall? He's barely bigger than Kyler Murray. Feet tall?
Kyler 5'9¼".
Okay. Joe Burrow is almost 6'4". Joe Burrow played high-level high school basketball. And Joe Burrow can hurt you with his legs, underestimated. He would take off and run and slide, and I was shocked at his mobility.
You remember what Tua did to LSU down there?
Mm-hmm.
In Baton Rouge?
Yep.
Took off 30 yards. Mm-hmm. They couldn't catch it.
Yep. I remember what Tua did against LSU at home this year. He went 21 of 40. Help me out. That's barely over 50%. That's not good enough.
400 and four tubs.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me, if your defense comes up 48, I mean, what you going to do?
But assuming the Bengals go with Burrow number one, do you think the Redskins should go with Tua at two, even though they have Dwayne Haskins on the roster?
Yeah, I do. And I was a big proponent of drafting Haskins. You know, I really was a Haskins booster last year. I loved what I saw at Ohio State. He did not play well. Look, I know he's very young. I know quarterbacks, once upon a time, it took him a while to get going. He didn't play well this year. Yes, he played a little better as the season went on. He was not prepared properly by the franchise. But based on what I've seen from Haskins, I think he may be a successful NFL quarterback. That remains to be seen. The odds that he turns into a great NFL quarterback, if you had to handicap it right now, don't look terrific. But could he be an NFL player? Yeah, I do think so. I think he could even maybe develop into a franchise quarterback. It's possible. If Tua is healthy, I'm confident he's going to be an excellent quarterback. I'm confident about that. I think most people are. The real question is the durability and the health. But I think once you know that about the talent, the mental makeup, all those things, ability to handle pressure, the accuracy, reading defenses, the ability to make off-schedule plays, even to use mobility in the right way, the whole thing. Once you know all that stuff about a guy, or you think you do, I think you can't pass him up if you don't know that you have a great quarterback. So maybe I'm being a prisoner of the moment. I know Chase Young is an amazing talent. But I don't think that Washington knows they have an excellent franchise quarterback. And I think for that reason, you can't pass up on Tua.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, I've been told that the Washington Redskins are not going to touch Tua because they're going after Chase Young. That's what Daniel Snyder wants them to do, and they're not drafting a quarterback. That's what I've been told. So we'll see what happens. That's what I reported weeks ago. That's number one. Number two, in terms of the individual in your household, Molly, I'd like to remind that particular person that the Detroit Lions have only made the playoffs three times this millennium. A matter of fact, they've made the playoffs eight times since 1991, which is the last time they won a playoff game.
For a new day,
okay,
Stephen
A. So the reality of the situation is it's not about the quarterback. It's about organization. From the top on down with the Detroit Lions, they've just been moribund, period. A quarterback ain't gonna come and save the franchise. The franchise, in all likelihood, will contaminate the quarterback because Matthew Stafford ain't that bad. Number three. Here's the reality of the situation. The Redskins should not consider Tua, and here's why. Because of the durability issue. You can't have a question mark at the quarterback position due to talent, then bring in an additional question mark because of durability in arguably the most violent sport that we know, or at least second to the UFC and maybe boxing. This is what it is in the National Football League. It's highly physical. It's very, very violent. And if durability is a question mark, you can't have a question mark at the quarterback position and bring in another question mark at the expense of passing up a stud pass rusher, which is the second most biggest need in the National Football League in this day and age. If you talk to football people, they'll sit up there and tell you, what's the number one thing you're after? A quarterback. What's the number two thing you're after? A pass rusher. Well, Chase Young is a pass rusher. He's the elite pass rusher in this upcoming draft. You've got the chance to get him with the number two overall pick. Could you imagine if they pass up on him and grab Tua and then Haskins doesn't pan out and Tua gets hurt early? That would be problematic for you. You don't want that, especially when the last time you did it, you drafted RG3, which wasn't a bad pick by any stretch of the imagination, but his leg almost got amputated by Haloti Ngata with that hit, and he was never the same in his career again. You simply can't take that chance by passing up somebody like Chase Young.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Stephen A., as far as Chase Young is concerned. And let's not forget, I don't even understand really why we're having this conversation. If you're Daniel Snyder, and by all accounts, he was in charge of the draft last year when they decided to draft Dwayne Haskins, and they took him in the first round, and we know what happened with Jay Gruden and the staff. They didn't want Dwayne Haskins, so therefore they didn't bring him along, the nurturing, the coaching. We get all that. They're gone. Okay, but the owner is still there. And I got to think that the owner, when he met with head coach now Ron Rivera, told him, hey, this is the guy that I put my word down on that I wanted as my quarterback. This is the guy who we're going to move forward with. So why would we come back a year later and draft Tua Tagovailoa at number two? Whatever happened in this country to drafting a guy, taking somebody who's young and developing them and nurturing them and seeing what you have at a certain point?
So far, Skip, he's been good as we've seen. 8 total touchdowns, 0 interceptions. No, 9 total touchdowns, 8 through the air, 1 on the ground. Obviously, that great touchdown run that we saw on Sunday. He's gotten off to the start, and when you factor in, Skip, he's down by 24. He's down Sunday twice by 10 points and able to pull that off. There's a reason why when you look at him, you are just in awe of what he's capable of doing. You and I both know, with those same weapons, if they fall behind by 24 with Matt Moore, they're not winning those games. They fall behind by 10. With Matt Moore, they're not winning those games. So sometimes, Skip, in the regular season, you see a star quarterback goes out, and you're like, well, anybody can do that. Look at all the – no, you can't. Hmm. You have to be – he's immensely talented. Now, here's the thing. When they did this, Skip, they based it on 3 games, okay, because Tom was obviously – I think he was number 2 seed. But he played 3 games. Rodgers was a wild card. He played 4 games. Rodgers topped it off with the win. Brady didn't win it.
Okay. So you're talking about Brady in 2017.
Brady in 2017. Because that's what they're looking at right now.
That's their third best,
That was
right?
their third best.
Rodgers, 2010 was their
2010,
second
the year
best.
He won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Mahomes, now he's going to have to finish it off in order to do this. Now, the thing that he has working in why he can be number one, Skip, I believe, is that he doesn't have a Derrick Henry. He does not have the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens defenses. We know if they win this, it's going to be on his arm. It's as simple as that. I wish I could say.
Here they come to the white flag. One lap to go. And it's a race from here on. No matter.